call the House Education Committee to. And then to his left is Representative Arnie Roblin. I do expect Representative Debbie Farr to be appearing shortly, and Representative John Lim. I do know that Representative Chip Shields will be unable to be with us this afternoon. Now, if you do have written testimony that if you are going to be testifying with us here today and you have a copy of your written testimony, you can come up these stairs, hand it to Kelly, our administrator. Give a little wave, Kelly. And she'll distribute it to us, and then you can proceed to take a seat over at this microphone. If you do not wish to address the committee, but you do have written testimony, please bring it again to Kelly, and we will make sure that we receive copies of that.
I would like to also announce that on next Tuesday, March 1st, the House Audits Committee back at the Capitol will be drilling down in the information that we get tonight a little bit more. We will have the Department of Education there to answer some questions relative to the numbers and some of the other information members that are in the packets that you have. And, of course, any of the members of the Education Committee that would like to sit with us there, please do come and join us. And so we will be going through the greater detail of the numbers at that point. But what we really want to do is have the opportunity here tonight to hear from those people that are impacted by the assessment system, and to help us help our school districts provide a quality education without getting out of hand with the costs. And so, with that, Chair Flores, if you'd like to introduce the first speakers.
Thank you, I will. And just as before I do that, I don't know that we might have standing room only, so it's a little early, so just be ready, okay? And what we'd like to do is try to schedule our time, and we planned on standing room only. So to begin with, we're going to limit each speaker to 3 minutes. Our committee administrator, Jim, out here, is going to wave his hand, and I'm going to catch his hand wave, and I will let you know when there is 1 minute left of your 3 minutes. And then that will provide you an opportunity to wrap up your comments. First to testify this afternoon will be Tori Perrin and Jessica Miner from Clackamas High School. And since there are two of them, they will be sharing 6 minutes.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, we go until 5:30, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So the testimony can go as long as it wants, but we leave.
Well, Representative Butler, I suppose that could be the case, but if the testimony is still going on and there's tap dancers appearing behind us, then we're in trouble. So then we won't be the only ones tap dancing.
Standing room only, we just filter into the crowd and work towards the door.
There you go.
I think the official word was yesterday in our hearing we heard of a situation that would result in deep doo-doo, so that is now official bureaucratic committee term, deep doo-doo. Ladies, welcome. And if for the record, as you begin to testify, please give us your name and where you're from.
My name is Tori Perrin, and I'm from Clackamas High School.
My name is Jessica Miner, and I'm also from Clackamas High School. In November 2003, 2 days of school were entirely devoted as STEM education days. Students were supposed to spend these days completing work samples. However, very few even attended class. STEM is not only hindering education time, it is taking money away from the budget and leaving other programs such as DECA and professional technical student organizations penniless.
Yeah, right.
Teachers are forced to change lesson plans to include STEM in the curriculum instead of solving algorithms or how the North won the war. They're also required to attend STEM workshops on how to score work samples. No matter how much training, every teacher will not be able to grade a work sample in the same way. It will still be subjective. On a math work sample for STEM, after solving the problem, students must go back and write an essay on how they solved the problem and then do it over again for verification. How can the state spend millions of dollars on a failing program when there is no money for classroom supplies and DECA is drowning without its funding? Since the addition of STEM, extracurricular activities have been declining because of the higher fees students are required to pay. Coincidence?
We think not. Students now have to pay a fee for fine arts classes and after-school activities. Sports fees have increased to as much as $100 or more.
Prior to STEM, many of these fees were not required or for sports were not as expensive. According to the Oregon Department of Education, we'll be saving $26.5 million if we were to drop STEM in camp. This is money that would be well spent in extracurricular activities.
For the embellishment of college applications everywhere, we are encouraged to participate in these extracurricular activities.
However, they're being replaced by STEM. Do colleges care if we've passed STEM?
Jason Studebaker, Stanford University admissions counselor, replied, "What is STEM?" when I asked him this question.
Even public secondary education institutions in Oregon don't look at STEM or CAM on an application.
Students today are stressed with rising college admission standards and graduation requirements, such as senior seminar experience and career-related learning experiences and more high school credits.
STEM is an added pressure that consumes the most time because it starts in elementary school and pursues through high school.
STEM is officially the standard for sophomores, but it takes until senior year to finish. That is evidence how ineffective STEM is.
These past 2 days, Tori and I visited David Douglas High School to help them refocus and create a new DECA chapter. David Douglas has had a DECA chapter in the past, but it dropped off when the school was obligated to focus on business CAM in the marketing department instead of having extracurricular leadership programs. This left no time to focus on DECA.
When I moved here 4 years ago, I was starting middle school in seventh grade. In my homeroom class, we were talked to a lot about getting our STEM binders ready. I raised my hand to see what this was. My teacher told me to talk to her after class, where she then told me to have my parents call to and talk to the school about what STEM is. My mother made a conference with my teacher, and I joined. My teacher kept darting around the subject, where she then finally said, "I don't know," when we asked her what STEM was. After an unsuccessful attempt to find out what this program was, my mother called my counselor. My counselor referred to my mother to a DECA expert, but my mom, sick and tired of being referred to someone else, told her to tell her what it is at that moment. The counselor said to give her a few weeks and then she could explain it to her. She needed to get information. How can STEM be imposed on students when teachers can't even explain to us what it is?
Brad Mora, a student from Milwaukee High School, moved here this year from Texas. He is a junior. When he first got here, he went on with school as normal, trying to make up for all the classes that are required before he can graduate. He went a whole semester before his counselor finally decided to tell him about STEM. When he made it to his counselor's office, his counselor had a freshman try to tell him what STEM was. He did not understand, so he made a second attempt at another counselor where someone was intelligent enough to explain this confusing program to a transfer student who already had senior seminar and getting enough credits to graduate on his mind. He has a year and a half left to complete all the requirements we have had to do since third grade. Brad comes in on days when we don't even have school and spends many hours after school to try to get his STEM done. "I have to work really hard to get this complete. A teacher from Texas tried to help me transfer the state test we do there, but Oregon wouldn't accept it." No matter when students transfer from a different school, they cannot walk across the graduation stage unless they have gotten STEM okayed.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity. Decisions for students and about students are often made without any consult of our opinions. Even though Jessica and I will not be affected if this bill passes, we care about the future of Oregon students and the repercussions STEM has on other programs, such as DECA, with budget cuts.
Thank you, ladies. Would you like to answer some questions, if there are any?
Sure, we'd love to.
Thank you. Committee, are there...
Representative Butler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do I understand that a new move-in who can't transfer their test, for instance, the young man that you indicated coming in from Texas, can't transfer the uniform standard nationwide tests to Oregon,
but must
catch up with the SIM program from grade three?
That's correct. He has to do all the requirements that that our district, North Clackamas School District, requires him to do before he can graduate.
Follow up,
Representative.
And the alternative is that you just don't end up graduating from high school when you move in from a foreign state to Oregon.
If you don't pass them, you will not graduate.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I had the question I had answered. And so if there's a young person moves from out of Oregon to Oregon, say in their senior year or partially through their senior year, then they have to have the SIM requirements accomplished before they can graduate?
Yes, they do. There have also been other tests that have been made for those kind of situations, but they still have to take those tests. My sister moved here her sophomore year and was also required to take all of those tests that before she could graduate in the 2 years. She had a little bit longer time, but she still had to take all those tests.
Hold on.
Follow-up, Representative Brown?
Then that can be a pretty steep hill for those young people to accomplish in a very short period of time, isn't it?
Yeah, especially for the students who move during their senior year and they have to get all the STEM done in less than a year.
They also have senior seminar they have to pass before they can graduate also, so it's a lot of stress on them on their senior year when they're also looking at colleges.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that what you're referring to is actually your school district's requirement and not a state requirement. There are some other options for students, especially students that transfer in the school district that my children attend high school in, the Bethel School District. They also have what's called Plan 2. And that is instead of a SIM, but allows a student, especially a transfer student who comes into the school district from another state, to meet the graduation requirements. So the graduation requirements should be uniform across the state, but each school district may impose their own graduation requirements.
Yes, that is probably true, and our district does do what we had said. You have to press, pass all the SIM requirements, but if we just dropped SIM and did not even have it anymore, that would create a lot less stress on the students, and they could focus on the other things that they need to graduate, like the high school credits.
Follow up.
My only concern is that your school district is still going to impose graduation requirements that may not be in line with the same requirements that other school districts in the state have.
I'm sorry, like what do you...
Well, by eliminating the SIM, you may still have other requirements that your school district imposes that other school districts don't. So a student transferring in may still have requirements that he has to meet.
That is true. We have senior seminar experience that they have to meet, but along with that, this year, they do have to meet SIM and senior seminar. So if we didn't have SIM, that's a lot less stress. They only have to complete the senior seminar. So that's one thing, one load off their shoulders that they don't have to worry about.
It would be nice if this graduation requirements were the same across the state so you could move around and you wouldn't have to worry about moving during your senior year and you suddenly have to get all this other stuff done that wasn't required in your school district.
Additional questions? Representative Dolan.
Yes, what subjects are you required to take the SIM test in?
We are required to take it in reading, writing, math, science, and math and science, those four subjects, and that's it.
And you talked about 2 days of class time spent on SIM. Is there more time spent on SIM besides the 2 days that you...
Every day, our teachers have changed all their curriculum to include SIM in every day, our everyday classes, but they have, our school district has included definite days that are just SIM days, and our teachers don't teach anything but letting you have time to do the work samples. And on those 2 days, very few kids just figured, you know, it was nothing, and they didn't even come to class because you're not even learning anything. You're just doing SIM.
That year was the first year SIM was required to graduate in our school district, so a lot of students hadn't passed their SIM yet, so they decided to give the students 2 days to just do their speeches and all their other work samples and get them done right then. But most students decided they didn't have to do that. They could just get it done in class, which is what you're supposed to do.
Follow-up.
And with the 2 days, I imagine that you're putting your portfolio together and your work samples are there. Have students from your school had opportunity to show the work samples or to use the SIM definition in going on with their education?
Not really. SIM is just kind of separate from everything else. It's just something else we do, and we don't really apply it in other areas.
I have not learned anything extra from SIM. All I've learned how to do is write an essay to go along with a math problem that I was required to do, and very easy math problem. I had to write an essay with it, so it's extra writing practice for me, and that's all I've done. I've been looking at colleges, and in each college that I've talked to, I've asked, How is SIM required? Have you even heard of it? Talk to them about it, letting them know I've passed state SIM, and they don't even know what I'm talking about. They have no idea what this Oregon SIM is.
Which colleges have you talked to?
I've talked to Stanford University, Pepperdine University, Northern Arizona University, and University of Montana, Missoula.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, Representative Roblin, did you have a question?
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
Representative Farr asked that question.
She asked her question. Okay, very well. Any further questions?
I have one, Madam Chair. I think, Ms. Perrin, I think that you made a comment
First of all, let me back up for just a second. You said you moved in when you were in the seventh grade, and you're a senior this year. Is that correct?
No, I'm a junior.
You're a junior this year. Okay, thank you. But I now to move on to the question I had. I believe you said that there seemed to be a lack of understanding on the part of the faculty as far as what SIM stood for, which it actually stands for Certificate of Initial Mastery and Certificate of Advanced Mastery. So they didn't really have a clear understanding of what the requirements were or what it even really was intended to do. Would you say that is because of a lack of training on the part of the state in providing training for teachers, or is that on, and maybe you talked to teachers and found, you know, got answers to this, or was it more due to lack of training at the school district level? What?
She told us what the acronym SIM stood for. She just couldn't tell me why we had it, what I needed to do to pass it, and what requirement this was. I mean, she couldn't even tell us really what I had to do anything with it. And I think I know that teachers get enough training because I notice they're always gone. We have substitutes a lot because they are at a training workshops. They've told us, the substitutes have told us. So I'm sure they get enough training. I just don't think that this is a very thought out system. It's just that people don't understand really what it is.
Thank you.
Thank you. I do have a question as well. And Ms. Perrin, I think you mentioned something regarding portfolios. Are you still doing portfolios?
No, I was. We did that in 7th and 8th grade to keep our work samples together. And then when I got into high school, they started a new system where we just got to see our scores that we got on the SimWorks samples, and then the teachers took them to the counseling office, so that way there wasn't any losing it with in our binders and our book bags, and that way they have better keeping track of them.
There's still been some issues at our school with
losing work samples
somewhere between the student and the teacher and the administrator's hands. Some samples have gotten lost and had to be redone.
But we don't do portfolios anymore. We don't really even see our work samples. We just know what score we got, and then they're gone.
Okay. Well, that's a question.
Question, Madam Chair. You're talking about lost work samples. That's an anomaly. That does not happen often.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that happens a lot at our school.
We hear a lot of kids in the hallways complaining about, because they either lost it or the teacher lost it or it got lost in the filing system somehow. It might be the students trying to blame someone else because they lost it or... because they have to turn it into the counseling office after the teacher grades it, so they might have lost it themselves. And
most of the time, though, I have friends that have said that the counseling office has lost it because they keep all of the records on a shelf. They go through their name, and their work sample's not there, and they know they've done it, and they know they've passed it. So then they have to go back and do another work sample because there's no proof anywhere that you have passed it or not, because it's not the original copy is not there.
If you have 10 students with a writing sample for your math question, how many of them will turn up missing?
I don't have any number like that, but I just hear about it often is all I know.
Thank you very much.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just interested just about your educations in their totality. And Tori, you mentioned that you were looking out of state to continue your education. Just like to know just a little bit about both of you, what you intend to pursue and use your educations for. Where will we read about you folks in the newspaper?
Well, I'd like to I'm going to Gonzaga University in September, and I'd like to go to law school eventually.
I hopefully will figure out which university I will go to next year. And I would like to get my major in business and a minor in law.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Follow-up.
Thank you. In this process, you're talking about going out of state. What can we do to entice you to stay in state or to bring your talents back to the state of Oregon? Not that Oregon needs more lawyers.
Well, I haven't chosen what school I'm going to yet. I am also looking at University of Portland and University of Oregon, as they both have very good business programs. So, I mean, I haven't decided. It all depends on whether I want to stay close to home or leave or not. So, it just depends.
Mr. Chair.
We might come back.
We note that you're wearing a rather handsome uniform. Is that a leadership outfit? Or tell us about that, if you will, please.
We're both state officers in the organization of DECA. DECA is an association for marketing students. It's a co-curricular organization that you can join in any marketing or business class. And we get the opportunity to travel. We learn leadership qualities, learn marketing management and entrepreneurship. We have a lot of fun, and I'm the District 1 Vice President for Oregon. And
I'm the Secretary/Treasurer for Oregon DECA. It's an international program. There's chapters in all 50 states, plus Canada, Guam, and they're starting up in Korea even.
I think we have one last question from the committee, and then we'll move to our next
thank you,
testimony, Representative Roland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've probably both taken the pre-set and maybe some ACT. I don't know if you would have done that yet or not, tests. In comparison to the math sections and the SIM testing, any relation one to have helped the other?
No. In SIM, you just have one question. You answer that question with an essay. It's usually a quite simple problem, and then you have to explain why you chose that number and why you're dividing it maybe by another number or why you're multiplying it by another number. And it's really just kind of common sense. I know what I'm doing, and if I get the answer right, I get the answer right. And then in SIM, you have to redo the problem in a different way to verify, you know, that you've got the right answer. In your SATs and ACTs, you have a limited amount of time. You need to get that problem done and hope that it's correct. So I don't see any relation between those two.
Follow-up.
A follow-up question. Thank you, Madam Chair. There's the math problem solving, which is one you just described, and there's also the math multiple choice.
The math multiple choice didn't really help with the SAT or the PSAT at all. It didn't. I took them at two different times, and it doesn't really seem like they had a lot of different types of questions, and I like the ones on the SAT and the PSAT better. I thought they were done better.
And also on the SAT, you are timed, so you have to do the problems quickly and efficiently. So, I mean, it's the multiple choice test. You can take it really almost as long as you want. So it's just doing it faster, and you have to make sure you know the problems and how to do them.
Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here on this beautiful afternoon. Our next testimony will be from John Nelson. And a reminder before you begin, please give us your name and where you're from.
My name's John Nelson. I live in Portland, East County.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, representatives. I came here today to talk as a parent, as a career educator, and as a six-year school board member from the Reynolds School District. As a parent, I'd just like to share very quickly some of my experience with the assessment system and the SIM. I pulled my children out of the testing early in the game when I found, like the young ladies, that the administrators and teachers couldn't tell me why they were doing this to my children. And they were sweating, coming home, saying, this is terrible, I had to take this test all day, and it doesn't have anything to do with anything else I'm doing. And as a parent, I was kind of off base with that one. As an administrator in schools, I have a real problem encouraging kids to do things that I don't think have any currency in their lives. And that's a real terrible feeling, working with kids in an underprivileged part of Portland in my professional life, encouraging them to pass the SIM because it's meaningful and knowing that there is no currency in the world of work or the world of higher education. In the Reynolds School District, we have a great relationship with the local community college at Mount Hood Community College. In fact, we're proud that about half of our seniors graduate with college credit. Yet when a graduate of Reynolds High School goes to be admitted into Mount Hood Community College, they don't ask for a SIM or a CAM. They ask them to sit down and take a placement test. Now, that's as close of an articulation as you have in the state between a K-12 system, the K-12 system and a community college. And there is no articulation as far as the SIM is concerned. In fact, the requirements for the SIM just don't match up with the requirements for admission into our colleges. As a school board member, this is particularly frustrating. For my 6 years, I've been listening to administrators, central administrators, and school administrators talking about how important the SIM and the CAM are for our children. Yet when put up against the corner, they can't tell us how or why these things are important. They're a costly distraction in a educational environment that is marked by dwindling resources. That we would distract recesses, both fiscal and personnel, from the process of teaching and learning. To impose a system that has no practical value to teaching and learning. The problem with the assessments is that they don't have any diagnostic or prescriptive value. They don't help the teacher inform the teacher as to what the needs of the kid are. They don't inform the district as to how they can allocate scarce resources. And they certainly do a terrible job of informing the community as to how well their schools are doing, vis-a-vis the report card system. And so I wanted to take this opportunity to come down here today and say, as a parent and as an administrator and as a board member, I've just been terribly frustrated. And the emperor is wearing no clothes on the SIM and the CAM. There just doesn't seem to be any good reason to keep this dog around. So I'm here to stand here today and say, why don't we shoot it? Okay?
Well, that probably is a discussion for another committee.
Sure, sure.
Are there any questions for Mr. Nelson?
Representative Butler?
Mr. Chair, I thank you very kindly. I guess, John, you come from a unique background with being a parent, administrator, school board member.
Yeah.
And so that gives us an excellent opportunity to ask some questions about where did you take them so that they're not subject to the rigors of the SIM and CAM?
Well, I didn't. I just excused them from the district's requirements. I sent a note to my kids' middle school saying my children will not be participating in state assessments, and I sent a note to the high school. And that was difficult, by the way, to jive with my fellow school board members and the administrators in the district, because it was a pretty public thing. But I, as a parent, made the decision that I just wasn't going to hold my, it didn't have any educational value for my children that I could see or that anybody could show me. So I wasn't going to put my children through it. I mean, they have enough.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a parent can opt their children out of the program?
Well, they have to give reason. Yeah. In my case, I said that it was against, philosophically opposed to what my wife and I believe was in the best interest of our child. And there is outs, and it's kind of sketchy, frankly. There's a lot of collusion. I mean, I'm just going to say it. There's a lot of collusion on the part of our schools to get parents to have their kids take the test, because much of how a school does and our district does on the test has little to do with the actual performance of the students, but really how many of them take the test. Boy, that's a great. That's a good one, isn't it?
Follow up.
Follow up.
Thank you. So, John, the one thing does concern me in this whole process, and that is that we score ourselves and give ourselves a state report card, but we're scoring ourselves against ourselves. It would appear that we really aren't getting a nationwide score. Where does Oregon rank up to other schools? If our students are, if the students of your schools, of the school that you've been an administrator at, where you're a parent, mm-hmm. And a member of the board, if they were to line up on, for instance, the Ohio or other examinations mm-hmm. that we used to have when my youngsters were involved in school in Oregon, would our students do as well, or when we score them against themselves, we've got some schools that pass and some schools that fail?
You know, I apples and oranges. I got to tell you, the SAT and the PSAT are kind of different animals. I understand that Oregon students do pretty well on these tests compared to other states. As far as the comparability of the Oregon state assessments with other states, I got to believe that was almost by design. There was a big movement in the 80s and early 90s against the idea of standardized testing, and they wanted to get into more authentic types of assessments. which don't lend themselves to accountability in the long run, but if done right, can lend themselves to some teaching tools, to some informing instruction. That has never happened within the current system. It doesn't get down to professional development on how you take the TESA scores, read them, interpret them, and turn those into an effective and efficient classroom activity for a student. That just doesn't happen. And so, you know, they're somewhat apples and oranges.
Representative Farr and then Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question for you is, did you go and meet with district officials and ask them to explain to you what the Certificate of Initial Mastery was?
You know, Representative Farr, I really didn't have to, because I had been involved in education for quite some time up to the point where my children were entering the schools. What I would ask is why, and I did ask my teachers, the principal at the middle school, why I should, because when I said I wanted my kids opted out, they called me in, and they said, John, this doesn't look good. Well, why are you doing this? And I turned it right back, and I said, well, I'm going to ask you the same question. Why are you doing this? And they said, well, this is how we keep the wolves at bay, so to speak. And I want to point out that every justification that I can come up with, or that anybody that I've heard can come up with for keeping the sin in the camp, has a lot to do with protecting adults and very little or nothing to do with providing a good education for students.
Follow up. Who are the wolves?
The press, essentially. The press uses the state report cards. And by the requirement of the law, they have to publish those report cards. If the report cards say that the school's bad, because they use these big words, you know, like bad and good, acceptable, not acceptable, they don't give much more information than that. So by keeping the number of kids up that take the test, especially in the early years of implementation, the more kids that took the test, the better you did. All right. So by keeping the numbers up in the school of the people who took the test, you could ensure that your school would have a satisfactory performance. Therefore, when the paper came out, that one word explanation of how everything is in your school would be, you know, passing, acceptable, good. And so there really is a fear on the part of the adults of getting clubbed by AYP now. But let's, you know, if from my perspective, the requirements of AYP have been on us for some time. We just haven't really lived up to them under the Oregon Act. And that's, you know, we want accountability. And at the bottom line, folks, is we want accountability from our assessment systems. We're not getting it. We want it to inform instruction. It's not doing it. We want it to inform resource allocation. It's not doing it. We want it to inform the communities, most importantly. And it's really doing a poor job at that.
May I make a comment? I think the most important thing is that we continue to have high expectations for our students.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I tell you that I don't think that the SIM and the CAM are high expectations for students. They're high expectations for adults, maybe.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Along the same line that you were going towards, and I think part of the pressure that schools feel with regard to getting people to take the test is, again, No Child Left Behind, mm-hmm. requires 95% of the people to take mm-hmm. the test. So when you opt out, that's one that counts right. against getting that 95%.
That's right.
And the same thing you were saying, then they get beat up because if they don't meet the 95, they're going to have a low
right.
score, no
right.
matter how the kids score on this.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, there is a problem here. I mean, the systems are held in harm. I mean, there's no question about it. The question is from I guess from my perspective, is what's the priority, the adults in the system who were paying to solve problems, or the children who are coming through this school right now needing an education and needing to have all the resources that we have, both human and fiscal, focused in on their literacy and on their ability to survive and to participate in the democracy? And I don't see the SIM and the CAM as helping in that process at all. I want one more thing, and I know my time's out. I went to David Douglas High School. I graduated in 1979. And in 1979, they had a requirement of all juniors and seniors that they participated in a career cluster. All right, which was a two-period long portion of the day, 5 days a week, where you went off and you did horticulture or you did engineering or you did auto mechanics. And I did child development, child care and development. A couple years after that, things got real fancy on the school to work, and money started coming out of Washington for these types of things. The point is that the benefits that the CAM have brought to our educational system in terms of programming and focus on vocation and post-secondary education, those emphases have been coming on in our schools for the last 30 years, and they have little or nothing to do with those three letters CAM. They have to do with good practitioners and educational leadership in those areas for the last 30 years.
Representative Dahlem.
Yes, John, I want to look at your experience as a board member.
Mm-hmm.
When you looked at the school schedule and talked about teacher improvement days, how many days have you allocated to learning how to implement SIM in CAM?
Well, you know, Reynolds was one of the first schools to step out on the diving board and say we're going to require this as a graduation requirement, and that happened with the class of 2001. And so a lot of the gearing up for implementation of the SIM and that stuff happened earlier on in the game. There's still a lot of time professionally that goes out to school to getting the kids' portfolios in place and the samples generated and administrated. We have, I think, 5 days in our contract. I may be mistaken. I wasn't in the last negotiation. And I think that probably two of those, for the people who are involved with the administration of the test, I think that probably two of those, as I recall, go towards SIM administration, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. You know, one of the crimes here is that the real costs, the real change of focus of our districts away from learning and away from kids took place over the last 12 years. And we can't recover that. We can't recover the fact that businesses don't care about the SIM and that our kids aren't the most enlightened children in the Pacific Rim by the year 2002. We cannot change the things that didn't happen because of the passage of the Act. What we can do now is cut our losses and turn around and look seriously at how we can work with the federal law and how we can work with the prevailing orthodoxy out there to do good things for kids and kind of throw this experiment, well intended as it may have been, let it take its place in history.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Thank you.
Next person that we have is Brooke Mowry, and as you're coming forward, Ms. Mowry, I have to let it be noted for the record that in the House Education Committee we have a little fund. It's called the House Education Committee Fund, and it is furnished by a little imposition of a fee for either using acronyms, and I've heard a lot of them, but we're going to let it pass today because we're all in a setting where we pretty much probably understand that. So I just wanted to note the acronyms, if you could, for those of us who may not be familiar with them, just tell us what they mean and then proceed. We started right off the bat, I think, using SIMCAM without saying its full definition, but be that aside.
Madam Chair, if I would have known that, we would have brought the audit's piggy bank, and we could have set it right there on the stage.
We could have had a fundraiser.
However, we will agree with you on that.
Okay. But an AYP is not a yuppie party.
It is not a yuppie party.
I found that out. let me on board to a yuppie party. No, it's an annual, yearly progress.
There you go. That's correct. Representative Marsh.
And to further clarify, that is a federal requirement under No Child Left Behind. So the 95% requirement for testing is a federal requirement, not a state mandate.
That is correct. And with that, there are some allowances for certain testing protocols within the 95%, who can, who cannot, and some deviation. So there are flexibilities there as well. Ms. Mowry.
Thank you. Chair Flores, Chair Crummell, committee members. My name is Brooke Mowry. I've taught for 4 years, and this is my second year as the college career counselor at Glencoe High School. I'm here today to discuss the relevance, or lack of the Certificate of Initial Mastery with college admissions and job searches. With 2005 college admissions, I believe not one school considered the SIM for student admittance. In addition, I don't think one school asked if students had their SIM. Only schools in Oregon are aware the SIM exists, and none of them ask for it. Even private schools in this state do not use the SIM, even for competitive admissions. It is apparent to me that SIM is irrelevant in the college admissions process. The same is true of employers. Again, I have not heard of one employer asking for SIM information. I have had one employer ask for a student's GPA, and more importantly, their attendance. Employers are concerned with the student's attendance patterns and whether or not they have the necessary job skills, not that they can pass the SIM science test. Again, I see no relevance for the SIM. When I move to the arena of teachers, I find the SIM duplicates work, costs time, and creates unnecessary paperwork. Teachers use reading, writing, and speaking daily in lessons. Assignments are used to teach literacy as well as good oral and written communication skills. The SIM tasks required in these areas often duplicate assignments teachers already do, but they put restraints and qualifiers on what must be done. Also, rather than giving students an appropriate grade for class, teachers are required to do an additional score sheet. They then are required to turn this into a records manager who inputs the data and files the sheets. These are part of student SIM portfolios that collect dust in filing cabinets around the state. You may ask what happens with these dusty files. Do students take them for future reference? No. Students are given an opportunity to take their files, and few do. The rest are thrown out after the school year is over. I spoke to one English teacher this week that told me about her yearly time schedule for SIM. The SIM reading and writing tests are administered during a student's English course. The teacher spends two 90-minute class periods teaching students how to take the test, so that's the process of the test. The reading test takes two class periods itself. The writing test is untimed and takes 1 week to administer. This is in addition to work samples, which have to be done in class, and these take two class periods. So, in one class in one high school, roughly 2 weeks of class time is spent on SIM activities. Although the SIM is irrelevant to colleges, employers, and teachers duplicate work and lose instructional time, the most important people to consider in this discussion are students. And if you remember only one thing, it's this. The SIM doesn't matter to students. Even when teachers attempt to make it valuable, students know having a SIM will not improve their chances of getting into college or getting a job. It's a medallion at graduation, a little pat on the back, or a brownie point. Many students resent that they have to go through the process of getting a SIM, and many students are discouraged when they don't pass. Someone asked recently if a SIM task will bring a lower-achieving student up in academics. I would argue that it discourages them more than anything. It is one more test and one more task. They think they will fail. And it's sad to me to see a struggling student refuse to give a speech because they're scared they won't meet the SIM standards. When we consider the purpose of SIM, that is raising standards, one would need to accept that all previous students were not challenged, were not expected to reach high, and that teachers did not have high expectations, and this is a false premise. SIM trainings and discussions have shown teachers have higher expectations than SIM scoring standards. Some even believe SIM has actually lowered expectations because of the pressure to meet a false standard. If we are interested in students achieving and reaching higher standards, we must allow for more instructional time and valued assessment, particularly in a time of limited resources. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Mowry?
Well, I have one, Madam Chair, if I may.
Chair Crummell.
Thank you. What I heard you say, Ms. Mowry, is that none of the colleges that you have dealt with, and this is on a nationwide basis, not only in-state but out-of-state.
Correct.
Have asked about the certificate, have asked about the requirements, have asked to see any of the portfolio work, have asked to see any of the work samples, have asked to hear tapes of any of the speeches, have asked to hear anything at all relevant to the either the SIM or the CAM.
Chair Crummell, only the universities in the state of Oregon are even aware that the SIM exists. And it's my understanding that students can put the SIM under honor sections, such as if they were a student council member. As far as portfolios, we in our school do not even keep portfolios any longer because it is a physical capacity issue. We have no space in the building for all of these work samples, one. Two, there are no tapes of student speeches. There's no such thing. Teachers generally integrate it into their class time or do it during class time, and it's, again, it's a practical capacity issue. I understand that some of the universities in the state of Oregon think they might use it in the future, but again, this is passed in the early 1990s and they have not done such to date. And out-of-state universities, they don't know what it is. They honestly don't care what it is, and they're not concerned with it at all. They just want to see a diploma, a GPA, and SAT scores.
So, follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up.
So in 14 years since this was implemented,
It's not been required. It's not been used, not even by the in-state schools. Now, I would like to ask you about one specific university. And I'm sure you've probably had students go to Western Oregon University. And I want to ask specifically about that school. Do they ask for a SIM or a CAM or anything at all related to the SIM or the CAM on the acceptance or denial of students or on the application of students requesting admittance to Western Oregon University?
Chair Crummell, I would have to review this year's Western Oregon University application specifically. There may be a box. I've helped some students fill that out. But even if that does exist on Western Oregon University's application, I don't believe it does, it is not used for admissions. It is not used in any way for consideration of admissions. What is used is their GPA, their SATs. If they do not meet those requirements in the state of Oregon, then it goes to a portfolio review, is what they call it, a file review. So a student's required to write then an essay or a personal statement and then also get letters of recommendation. And on the basis of those areas, then a student will be considered for admissions.
I bring that up, Matt. Thank you. I bring that up, Madam Chair, because the Senate President is the assistant to the President of Western Oregon University. And if our Senate President's school isn't even requiring it, then what the heck are we doing?
Probably topic for another discussion as well.
You're right.
Representative Clark.
It is.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Understanding that the SIM testing requirement is very time-consuming, do you know if Oregon were to implement a different form of testing, what the time element would be in relation to the SIM?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, I don't know what the time frame would be for that because the only testing I know of as an educator is the SIM testing that's used currently in the state. What I do know is that, you know, it's been created in the state, and the perception of educators, some like it because it's a nifty thing that we've done, you know, kind of like that brownie patch. Well, look, in Oregon, we created it. But some of us believe that, you know, it's not tested over time. And so we could pull another test that we know has worked over time. It's worked in other states, and it's effective. Just this year, one of the math SIM tests was completely thrown out because they couldn't write it well enough. I'm a trained social studies teacher, and ever since I was in teacher education, they've been telling me the social studies SIM test is coming down the pike. And social studies teachers, we look at each other like, you know, they're a little off their rockers. You know, it's hard to test over U.S. history and world history and all those things.
Yeah, I resemble that remark. Like a social studies teacher.
Yes. We are
a little
bit
off my rocker.
they cannot come up with a social studies test that they can implement.
I might say that social studies and language were actually taken out of the SIM requirements 2 years ago.
Yes.
During the last session.
That's true.
So you won't have to worry.
Thank you. Although they tell us we still do, by the way.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll use an acronym because I don't know what it stands for other than PASS, which is the proficiency-based way to get admissions into schools. And I don't know if all schools use it, but as there are a few that can use that for an app.
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, PASS was never fully implemented. A couple of years ago, PASS was, again, coming to us, and it's something that I've been told that the university's kind of created. And once the high school teacher said, hey, listen, we're not going to be able to evaluate this much assessment and, you know, do this much for all of these kids and these portfolios in the way you want it, and said to the university professors, hey, why don't you folks do the evaluation? And once that happened, they no longer wanted to do it. So PASS does not exist at Glencoe High School.
John.
Yes.
Excuse me, Representative Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm intrigued. I understand the storage problem. Some students pick up their portfolio. Some portfolios are thrown away. Could you give me some notion of how many students exit the building with their portfolio under their arm?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, what we keep are not actually portfolios. What we keep are the score sheets. Okay, so each student has a file, and what you'd see is a sheet like this that has the scoring guide on it and room for comments and a title of the tasks itself.
No work samples.
No, sir, no work samples, and that's where the capacity issue came in. And I believe I've seen two students actually pick up their files, and we had 400 graduating seniors last year.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Just a comment, 10 years teaching social studies. I don't know what that means.
Well, thank you for the comment anyway. If there are no further questions, thank you very much, Ms. Mary. We appreciate you.
Madam Chair, I also brought with me a paper that was written by a former student last year that he gave to me in hopes that someday this issue would come up again, and he wrote it for a SIM test, so I've brought copies for you. I'll give to the clerk.
You would leave that with Kelly. Thank you. Thank you. Ben Seal, are you ready to come forward?
Hi, my name is Ben Seal. I'm a senior at Clackamas High School and a projected valedictorian. In my opinion, SIM-CAM is an unnecessary waste of our tax dollars. Passing SIM is just a requirement to graduate in my school, but other than that, it doesn't have any practical application to my life other than being able to escape 4 years of high school. It's not going to help me get a job or get into college, and this is discouraging considering the significant time and effort my peers and I have expended in order to overcome this added obstacle. In addition, SIM is a misuse of teachers' valuable time. For example, instead of my English teachers being able to teach me how to do a good speech or a good piece of writing, they have to spend time teaching me how the state wants me to write a good speech or write a good piece of writing. I was talking to Mr. Gary Dawson today. He's the head of the Career and Vocational Center at my high school. He's a chief operator, so to say, of SIM at our school and has extensive experience with it. And he expressed that while he thinks it's necessary to have an independent third-party assessment of student achievement, SIM-CAM doesn't do a good job and is filled with flaws. And also I'd like to add that I applied to Oregon State and was accepted this year. Nowhere in the application did I see the word SIM or CAM. And that, you know, if it's so important as some people like to say, I wonder why it's not on even a state school's application. And I don't know, if CAM is supposed to be pertinent and important to high school students, all I know is that CAM exists. I don't know if it has any applications or what it's supposed to do for me or my fellow students. In conclusion, I think SIM-CAM is a waste of our limited resources, a waste of teachers' time, and a waste of students' time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Seal. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Farr.
Well, it may not be as much of a question as a statement, but I just want to make it perfectly clear that we still will need to continue with assessments in this state. And to implement those assessments, there will be some class slash teacher time involved. And I think it's extremely important for the students that are here to understand that even if we do dissolve the Certificate of Initial Mastery program,
we're on SIM-CAM.
That you know, that we will need to replace it with another form of assessment.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Further questions? Thank you very much, Ben. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I have a question for Representative Farr, and that is, if we end up replacing the SIM-CAM for some sort of an assessment tool, perhaps we would go to an assessment tool that would be uniform, that a student from Pennsylvania might be able to relate to, or a university in Pennsylvania, rather than some kind of an assessment tool that's relevant only to high schools in the state of Oregon.
I do think that's a good point, but I think also, since you weren't at our last education meeting, one of the things that we learned from Pat Burke from the Oregon Department of Education is that each state is required to develop their own tests, their own report card. They don't have to manufacture the test the way we do in Oregon. We can use an off-the-shelf test. But there is still no assurance that whatever we decide to do will be in compliance with the requirements that other states have.
Madam Chair, I would ask then if 20 of the other states or 15 of the other states or 40 of the other states were to use some sort of a examination off the shelf and it was all the same, I find it kind of incredible that maybe the federal government under the No Child Left Behind Act would come in and say, those 40 don't count, but Oregon does because it's got its own program which has been working for these many years. In other words, the assessment, I would find it very difficult that if we were using a uniform assessment with most of the other states, and I understand that off-the-shelf material exists, then it would be very difficult for the federal government to come back and say, top-down driven, it looks to us like this isn't acceptable, even though the majority of the states have embraced that uniform exam. So I think we could probably find some comfort level away from the SEMCAM, but I agree with you fully that some kind of continuing assessment is necessary. I guess this is an area where I'm not willing to risk our students' futures by the potential loss of their ability to have a uniform assessment with other states so that they can compare themselves with other states, particularly as they go along. I appreciate the fact that we've got outgoing activities, the examinations that are required to get into the various universities, and that's wonderful. It's when they're an eighth grader, a seventh grader, a ninth grader, an 11th grader, that if we can have some sort of a uniform examination there, and I don't want to, as much as I would like to see Oregon out in front, I'm not willing to risk the potential futures of the youngsters by saying we'll come up with our own, and if it doesn't cut the mustard, then guess what? You're sunk.
I agree, and I think that my only comment regarding the test was that there are several different tests available, and it's up to the state to decide which test to use. But I absolutely agree with you. The important thing is that we provide the best education possible for our children, and we have a way to judge whether we are providing that education.
We're 100% in agreement.
And for clarification, let me add that, yes, they're across the country, as a result of the requirements of No Child Left Behind, each state does have the opportunity to present to the feds their particular system of assessments for which they must be approved. However, and therefore, every state is itself separate and distinct, unfortunately. There are components, however, of assessments that do allow a small gathering of information on which some modest national evaluation can be made. So it really isn't, we can debate this in our further platform, but I don't want to take the time from those who have come here.
Madam Chair, I might point out that you did use an acronym.
That'll and I did it on purpose. And I will pay for it. Representative Bill, did you want to make one comment?
For Representative Butler, and we do have a slight advantage. We did find that we've drafted our own test, and that was done by teachers. We've drafted the items on that test. We've administered the test. And then, rather than diagnosing the system, at our meeting, we declared ourselves as failing our own test. It's a little akin to being in a foot race all by yourself and declaring yourself the loser. I'm very concerned about that, Representative Butler. Very concerned, and your question is well taken by me.
Thank you.
With that, then, I would like to go ahead and move on and ask Mr. John Liljegren. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't tear your name up too bad. To go ahead and come forward, please. Is that a Norwegian name?
Don't you dare call me Norwegian. Swedish.
Swedish.
Oh, I apologize.
Sure.
I apologize.
International incident right here.
So did I? So.
Good job, yes. It's Liljegren.
Liljegren. Yeah. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm John Liljegren. I live here in the Wilson area. Both my sons, Todd and Kyle, attended Portland Public Schools all the way through and graduated from Wilson High School. Todd graduated in 1999. His class was supposed to be the first class under the SIM regime, but due to postponements in implementation, he never really had to go through all of that. And to affirm what was said before, he attended a private college in the Middle West, and of course nothing was ever asked about SIM, and I'm sure to this day they would have no idea what that is all about and wouldn't care what it was all about. I would also like to point out that although he's 2 years out of college with a degree, at this point he really doesn't know what he wants to do with his life, doesn't really think he wants to pursue anything in his degree. That doesn't relate to SIM, but I think about that when I read the CAM documents and the whole notion of 14-year-old boys. I know nothing about girls, but I do know a little something about boys and the notion of 14 and 15-year-old boys having a real good idea what they're going to do after high school and coming up with plans and reflecting on those plans, et cetera, as part of the CAM program is, to use the most charitable word I can think of, ludicrous. Anyway, my second son, Kyle, was subject to the SIM program. He graduated from Wilson almost 2 years ago. He attends University of Oregon and, again, was never asked anything about SIM as part of that entrance requirements. I would, on occasion, because I was familiar with the whole state program, ask Kyle and his friends things about the SIM testing, and I think it would be fair to say, if you had walked around Wilson High School at the time, that to the extent students were even aware of it, they would probably be generally contemptuous of the whole idea. They just didn't take it seriously and found it frustrating. And from what I heard from teachers, it was pretty much the same way. It was something they had to do, but it really wasn't taken seriously as something of educational value. And isn't that the ultimate test? What is the educational value of this whole thing? I just, in my view as a parent, observer, the whole, and I should say I'm in favor of testing. I'm not one of these anti-testing people. I'll come back to that in a second. But the whole work sample business and portfolio business and some of these efforts to create the appearance of objectivity in the subjective grading schemes that they have on writing samples, for example, it really makes no sense. You cannot establish to any scientific, reasonable scientific level a connection between what this program does and some kind of future performance. As I said, I would favor testing. I don't know why we don't invite one of the national companies like the Iowa Test of Basic Skills or Stanford 9, or I think they're up to Stanford 10, or the Terra Nova, pull one of those. I as a parent like the idea that it's you've got a national sample, you've got people who have been making these tests for 60 years and do all these things that psychometricians do to make sure all the questions they ask are correct. I don't have to worry about the test being dumbed down from year to year as I frankly do with the Oregon test. I have no way of knowing whether or not it's been dumbed down. I like that there's a comparison to a national group. And if there are gaps between what our standards require as a state and what these tests cover, well, let's find out what those are. I think that's a good question for state legislators to ask. If you, ODE, believe that these national tests don't cover the full extent of our content standards, well, give us a list of the 1,000 or so content standards and tell us which ones are covered by the Iowa test and which aren't. And if they can't do that today, if you can't go down to ODE's building today and have them pull that off the shelf, then they haven't done it. And if they haven't done it, then they're lying to you when they say there are gaps between the national tests and our standards. So with that, I'll close. Be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Liljegren? Thank you very much.
Anyway, I hope you will pass legislation to get rid of SIM and CAM.
Thank you very much for your comments.
All the best. Kyle and Todd, too.
Yes.
Good luck.
Okay. With that, then, I would like to ask Doug Costi from the he's the Assistant Superintendent of the Office of Assessment and Information Services at the Oregon Department of Education. Maybe that first question that Mr. Lodegren was just mentioning is a good one to ask. But, Mr. Costi, I would like you to kind of to start out by giving us a broad overview of some of the costs that are involved with the current assessment system. And members, I would also point out that at your places is a packet of information that has been passed out. We want to stay fairly broad tonight, but again on Tuesday, Mr. Costi will be with us in the Audits Committee Tuesday morning, and we will drill down on those on this handout more at that point. So that would be a good thing for the Audits Committee members to take a look at. And then, of course, as I mentioned, the Education Committee is certainly invited to come and join us at the dais.
So when he arrives and sees the dental chair, he'll know what you mean by drilling down.
Yes, he will. Mr. Costi, go ahead.
Chair Crummell, Chair Flores, members of your committees, for the record, my name is Doug Costi. I'm Assistant Superintendent of Assessment and Information Services, and I want to thank you for calling me here today. It's been interesting hearing the policy discussion that's been going on. And for the record also, I'm an operations guy, so I like to think of myself as more policy agnostic. I'm here to deliver assessments and information services. So that's why I'm here to deliver the speech on the money. My staff have pulled together over the past couple of weeks and have worked with Representative Crummell's staff and Representative Flores' staff on putting this packet of information together for you. In that packet is a very detailed list of assessment cost items as requested. If you look at that spreadsheet, they total about $19 million, I believe, is the total cost, including all of the AYP, the adequate yearly progress, and report card costs. There's a number of costs that are associated with generating the report cards and those AY reports to go out to schools and districts. Also, there's an additional cost that has been pulled together by Dr. Salam Noor's office, the Education Innovation Office, for about $771,000. These are the CAM development activities that occurred during the 03-05 biennium. This has been a very interesting exercise, and I've had conversations with House Ed about Assessment 101 and how that how we generate the assessments. And one of the first things that we did out of that at the request of Chair Flores was to look at what it costs to develop the cost to develop an item. So we went through a flowchart that identified all of the activities to develop an item and created a cost for each of those categories, indicated that it's about $72 per item based on what we did in 03-04. We then further took the Appendix A and broke it into what we call a high-level summary. So we looked at very high-level activities within the assessment design, administration, and reporting categories of an assessment system, and what is entailed in terms of what we outsource currently to contractors and what our staff do internally. So we've delineated those costs between contracted costs and staff costs. I believe on the cover sheet of your document, we just to kind of summarize, we've identified two types of assessment costs. One is a performance assessment, and you hear about those relative to the SIM. Those are the math problem solving and writing assessments that are administered by the state. Last biennium, to the end of this biennium, we project spending about $5.75 million on those tests for a total cost or a per student cost of $13.69. On the other hand, multiple choice tests account for about $9.6 million during the biennium, which are about $6.43 per test per subject. So based on that, I'd like to just kind of underscore the cost per student based on projected 0305 are they include what we refer to as fixed and variable costs. And I would like to maybe point out the fact that there's a greater percentage of variable costs assigned to the performance assessment, primarily because teachers need to score each one of those pieces of work, and there's a cost associated with a teacher scoring that work. That variable cost won't be absorbed. On the other hand, within a knowledge and skills, this is the multiple choice environment. There's probably more fixed cost involved because we develop infrastructure to collect that information. For example, we have a contract with a corporation out of Yardley, Pennsylvania, to host the web-based testing infrastructure. That's a $2.4 million cost that's included in that $9.6 million. And that cost doesn't go up or down based on the number of tests. As long as we stay within a number of tests presented per day or at concurrent users, it's 10,000 concurrent users, they won't go over that. So hopefully that wasn't too much information for you, but that's my comment.
Well, we'll want you to go ahead, but I see there's just a burning issue here, Representative Roe.
Madam Chair, on the cost per student tested, when it says two knowledge and skills tests, two performance tests, is that because we're talking biennium, so it's two and two, or is it because there are two different tests for each student?
Chair Flores, Representative Roblin, that is per year, and it's based on each student takes two subjects per each type of test.
Follow up.
My understanding is there are three knowledge and skills tests, science,
yep,
math, and reading.
Chair Flores, Representative Roblin, that is correct, and I believe I talked to science will be required as part of the AYP and report card for the next biennium, and I did correct that with the committee. That was the committee staff's document, and I left it in there, but you're exactly correct. There will be three tests in 0507.
Mr. Costi, when you began at first, you said with the metrics, it broke out to about $70 per item.
Mm-hmm.
How many items are created?
We, at the beginning, Chair Flores, members of the committee, at the beginning of the process, we call in teachers for a weekend deal to generate items. There were 17,200 items generated. At the end of the day, at the end of the year, actually, after we take these items through a series of review panels for content review, accommodations, et cetera, it filtered out, and then we do some technical studies on the items to see how they react. We ended up with 13,400 items. So the total cost of that process was about $960,000, and I derived the cost of $72 per item at the end, the good items, what we call them, that actually made it to the bank.
And then how do we factor for the costs that went into building the first pool that was then refined, the 17,200?
Those are, Chair Flores, those costs are all included in the total $960,000. So when I calculate the per item cost, I use the smaller number that indicates this is the cost of each good operational item.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Dahlin.
I'm the tall one. Doug, I want to back up, and I want to back up just a little bit. Pardon me, Mr. Costi. I've known Mr. Costi a very long time.
30 days?
No. 30 years. Pardon me for the informality, but I do have some colleagues here that are on the audit committee, and I would like to bring out some information on the assessment. when before we started the process in building the standards that Oregon determined were important, and I'll use eighth graders. I want to go with eighth graders. Who built those standards?
Chair Flores, Representative Dahlem, Oregon teachers under the guidance of the Department of Ed built those standards.
Thank you. And you just explained to us that how the items were developed. And so our teachers in Oregon developed those items to measure our progress against those standards. Is that correct?
Chair Flores, Representative Dahlem, that is correct.
Then when we look at eighth graders, teachers built the standards, teachers built the test items. And with your knowledge of numbers, how did our eighth graders perform on that test?
Representative Flores, Chair Dahlem, I don't have access to that number. I'll have to get back to you at this
point. He's a numbers man.
Yep.
Thank you, Doug. I might say that our eighth graders did poorly. And I think that's an important issue to raise for you people, that when we design the test, design the standards, and then say that we've done poorly, I have teacher friends that I must speak up for. They designed excellent standards. They designed an excellent test. There's a hole in the donut somewhere. I'd like to find out where it is.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate that. Before I start firing questions at you, Mr. Costi, did you have anything else that you wanted to comment on? Or did you pretty much get through the...
I believe I hit all of them, or Chair Crummell, I believe I hit everything I needed to hit.
Okay, thank you. What I wanted to ask you is, with regards to the math standard, so as we're looking at the costs of this, but as we're looking at the math questions, wasn't it recently announced that the department basically took the math test and sort of pitched it because it was not reliable and that it was not statistically valid instrument to use for what we were using it for, either for performance tests or for knowledge-based tests?
Chair Crummell, specifically, there are two types of math tests. There's a knowledge and skills, which is the multiple choice, and there are the math problem-solving tests. Technically, what we did was suspend the math problem-solving. We brought in a panel of experts to look at why that test was not performing consistently or in a reliable manner. And they provided feedback to us that I'd like to share. And again, I'm talking specifically about the math problem-solving performance assessment. The first reason was it's what I refer to as a one-trick pony. A student is provided or asked a single question, and they base their response on that single opportunity to respond to a question. The second purpose or the second reason that there were issues with that test were we didn't have a scaling methodology in place. So in advance of delivering those performance assessments to the kids, had we developed a scaling methodology and an adequate field test methodology, we believe we could have had a valid and reliable test. But since we did not have that in place, the recommendation came down that we suspend the math problem solving until we feel that we can develop a valid and reliable instrument.
And, okay, thank you. And was... I'm going to assume for a moment that someone in the Department of Education was responsible for, you know, how the test was put together and for the flaws that were there. So my question then is, was anybody held accountable for the flaws that were in this, or are we just sort of putting this up to a bad experience and we'll do better next time?
Chair Crummell, this is the first time I've been asked that question, so I don't have a response for you.
you. Would that basically then, when we look at the good questions versus the bad questions, wouldn't that drive up the costs on a per unit basis if we basically have a math test that has been flawed and has been, in your terms, suspended from use?
Chair Crummell, the cost of developing and those types of items is fairly consistent with the $72 per item. We don't generate a whole bunch of those items, so the real cost is in the back end of scoring those items. While we suspended the test, we did not then score the test. That's where the real cost of those performance assessments are, is getting the teachers in to score the work and move that paperwork around.
So what I hear you saying then is that, and I know from my colleagues here, to hear me say something about performance tests or measures being eliminated, but when we're looking at educational testing, if we were to eliminate the performance tests part of the assessments and stay only with the skills and knowledge parts of the assessments, which is what most of the off-the-shelf national type of programs tend to do, is my understanding, then we could save a significant amount of money. I'm sort of making a I'm interjecting that here, but am I correct in that we could save a significant amount of money?
Chair Crummell, depending upon your definition of significant, we could save money, yes, and I can point you to the spreadsheet that would identify what you could potentially save out of performance assessments.
What we would probably save, though, is in the neighborhood of $6 to $7 million, do you think?
Chair Crummell, that may be a little bit on the high side. I believe if you look at what I have calculated, we spent about $5.75 million on that test, or we projected to spend that through 2003-2005. Now, some of those costs may be allocated between the performance and the multiple choice costs, but, you know, a safe bet would be in the $5 million range.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And I will resist the temptation, Madam Chair, to delve deeper, because we want to save that for Tuesday, but also because we have more people to get to in the audience. Is there any other questions for Mr. Costi?
Mr. Chair, can you just go right down the line?
Yes, Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Costi, have you done exploration or inquiries about other tests? Options with other testing companies?
Chair Flores, yes, we put out an RFI, and initially the purpose of that RFI, request for information, is to look at what is being offered from off-the-shelf vendors. We did receive a few responses to that. And it gives us an opportunity to look further. We are anticipating going through a request for proposal process later this year.
Was your request for information for both components of the knowledge and skills as well as assessments, or separated out?
Chair Flores, it was for both components, and some could respond and some could not. The thing I would call out, though, is we didn't have a very extremely detailed set of business requirements that they could respond to. So in order to do a true apples-to-apples comparison, we really need to go through the total request for proposal process.
Is an indicator of the ballpark figures of which they came in, or is that something you want to save for the audits committee hearing?
Chair Flores, I would prefer to save that for the audits committee.
Give
me more time to prepare for that.
Okay, Representative Dellum?
It's just, and perhaps more performance than anything else. And I'm going way back, and we've already established I'm a social studies teacher, so be careful with me on the answers, Mr. Costi. In test and measurements, a few years ago, in order to establish reliability, isn't it a normal protocol to test each item before you take it into the classroom on that level?
Chair Flores, Representative Dahlem, that is correct. We call that process field testing. So we embed those items. The child doesn't typically know which are field test items and which are operational items.
And with the problem-solving portion of the math test, this wasn't done?
Chair Flores, Representative Dahlem, it was done, but it was done in a it probably wasn't done in a controlled environment. In other words, the field test process wasn't done in a blind fashion and side-by-side exposed to many students. It needed to be exposed to more students than it had been.
Thank you. So we had a breach of what would be called normal protocol in the classroom. I'm not sure how statewide norm tests are done, but most teachers would use that protocol, and we had a breach in that protocol.
Chair Flores, Representative Dahlem, I'm going to be leery to say we had a breach in protocol because I wasn't there, so I don't know exactly what happened. I have a sense of what happened. It may not have been according to specific standards, measurement standards.
I don't want to drill in too deeply, but do I have any assurances that the items that we used in the other questions or for the other part of the test that the appropriate protocol was used? Do I have any assurance of that?
Chair Flores, Representative Dahlem, from my level, I have the assurance of my staff that all items go through a field test process. They are evaluated with our psychometricians, and before they're operationalized, we do analysis on how those items perform, and only then are they counted in the tests.
Representative Farr.
Thank you very much. Mr. Costi, regarding the CAM expenditure, and I'm looking at page 1, Appendix E, you have a total of $341,904 that are identified as federal funds, Title V and IDEA funds.
Chair Flores, Representative Farr, I did not develop the CAM documents. Those were done by Salam Noor and his staff. So I would.
Well, I'm following.
I'm follow-up.
I was just bringing that figure to your attention because then also on the front page of the document, you do have a total cost of the CAM, $771,099. So I'm just curious to know if the federal fund distribution is included in that figure.
Representative Farr, that is, I believe, a combination of all funds. And as a point of clarification, I should probably also say that all of my figures are a combination of federal and state funds for the total cost of the assessment system.
I have another follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you very much. So what I wanted to really ask you is, how is the CAM money appropriated for each school district? And is their money appropriated specifically identified as Certificate of Advanced Mastery dollars?
Chair Flores, Representative Farr, again, I cannot answer that question. I would be happy to get Dr. Noor to come in. This is his office that manages that program. So rather than make a guess, I would like to bring that back on Tuesday.
I was just going to ask Mr. Costi if you would go ahead and bring that information back on Tuesday, and we will also make sure that any of the Education Committee members that don't or can't join us on Tuesday morning, we will make sure that you all get copies of any additional material that Mr. Costi brings so that you have that information. Okay. Great. I think what we better do is go ahead and move on. Mr. Costi, thank you very much. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you all, too.
With that, then, I would like to see if I can have Rob Kramer come up, please. And uh,
Chair Flores, Chair Crummell, members of the committee, thanks very much for coming up to Portland to bring the legislative process to the people of Portland. I think this is a very important issue, and as many of you know, it's an issue upon which I've worked for a good many years. I don't think I need to spend a lot of time going into the specific reasons why I think that Oregon's assessment system, and particularly the performance assessments, are flawed and are not serving us very well. We've had those discussions before, and I think my positions on those are well known. I would like to talk a little bit about some of my experiences on the campaign trail. Most of you know I ran for Superintendent of Public Instruction in the year 2002, and like any statewide candidate, I traveled far and wide trying to bring my message to the people of Oregon, talked in the course of the 9 months or so that I campaigned to thousands and thousands of people, went to schools regularly and talked to children, students in schools and our high schools, talked to administrators, talked to school board members, talked to teachers. And I found on the campaign trail that it was, if not universal, at least overwhelming negativity about Oregon's assessment system. That is, the overwhelming opinion amongst teachers, students, administrators, and school board members was that our assessment system is not serving our needs, primarily because the assessment system takes up far too much time out of the classroom, time that should be targeted to teaching kids content is being used instead to teach kids how to take rather peculiar forms of assessments. And that's where most of the dismay over our assessment system, that's where most of it came from, the teachers. Now, in the last legislative session, we had an effort to take a look at this issue, and I put on my website an online petition which people could come to and leave their name and contact details, email, address, phone number, to say, yes, I support getting rid of SIM and CAM and the performance assessments in our assessment system. Over the course of just a couple of months, almost 2,000 people came to the website and left their personal contact details and signed a petition of support. And I'm going to submit the names that are currently on that petition. That website has been there since the last session. But amongst those about 2,000, 272 of them were teachers, and 257 were students, 768 parents, 21 school board members, about 9 school administrators, and 500-some-odd other interested citizens. And I have the list of their names, not their contact details, of course, but their names that I'll submit to the committee. Prior to coming here today, this week, I sent an email out to the people on this petition and said, we are going to have this hearing. If you're around Portland, please come and make your views known. But if you can't come, just write me a note, and I will submit your views to the committee. And from that one email, I had, I think, 78 individual emails in responding, each with a personal note written about what they think about Oregon's assessment system. And I'll be submitting this also to the committee. Obviously, there's not much time even to read excerpts from this, but if you read this, and many of these statements come from teachers, parents, and students, pretty much the same profile of people who signed our online petition, they are expressing their heartfelt opinion that what's happening with our assessment system is that it's having too big of an impact on our kids' learning. And that's the crux of the issue. I thank you very much for taking this issue up and trying to fully understand and get down to the, not just the numbers, not just what it costs the Oregon Department of Education. That's a real number, but I don't think that's the major impact of this. The real number is what's the cost, not just to our school district for implementing the assessments, but the cost to our children's education when we take 2 weeks out of a school year in order just to implement an assessment. You can never recover 2 weeks of time out of a third grader's or a fifth grader's or an eighth grader's school year. That's a cost gone forever. And we have to make sure that whatever assessment system that we have not only gives us good diagnostic data, not only gives us good data that we can use to hold ourselves and our teachers accountable, but also does so in a way that is the most efficient in terms of cost and the most efficient in terms of impact on the classroom. Because when it comes down to the final analysis, that's the true cost of any type of assessment. How much does it take away from teaching and learning in favor of measuring? Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kramer. I would just point out the physical education side of my license says, you know, we actually test all the time in physical education because it's and it's just part of the curriculum. Are there any questions for Mr. Kramer? Representative Farr?
Thank you, Chair Crummell. Mr. Kramer, I was curious to know if you have any idea what time is involved in assessing student knowledge with a different type of test, perhaps like with the Iowa or the Stanford Achievement Test.
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, actually I do. We in the charter schools that I am co-founder of, we every single year we give all of our students one of the off-the-shelf nationally normed standardized tests. And that's the Stanford Achievement Test 9th version. And we give the reading and the math battery from those tests. And so it's pretty much equivalent to what the knowledge and skills test might be at the third grade or fifth grade. And now the time it takes to do that kind of varies depending on the level of child. With kindergartners, it's going to take a little more time because you can't do it in a large group because these kids are, you know, don't know how to take this kind of test as well, so it's much smaller groups. But if we get to kids that have taken these types of tests before, say our third graders who have now been in the school for a few years, it's about 3 days in order to give the battery of the test. You can't give a third grader a full day of the multiple choice testing. It's just too hard on them, so you kind of have to spread it over a few days, but about 3 days to give the test.
Follow up?
Follow-up, Representative Farr?
Using the school that you teach at as an example, how many children who attend that school are English as a second language speakers, learning disabled, have physical limitations, or come from a poverty situation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, let me specify, I don't teach at the school. I'm a co-founder of this group of charter schools, and we now have three campuses open, one in David Douglas School District, one in the Reynolds School District, and one in the Woodburn School District. And as you might imagine, the demographic of those kids differs considerably depending on where the children are. I don't have those numbers with me. I will tell you, in the Woodburn School District, Arthur Academy, 70% of our students have Hispanic surnames. Now, are they technically in an ESL program? Actually, none of them are in an ESL program because the school district is withholding ESL funds from us, and they won't allow us to have access to those funds. So that's another issue entirely. But 70% of the kids, based on our home language surveys, speak a language other than English at home in the Woodburn School District. School. In Reynolds and David Douglas, it's far less of a percentage than that. It's more like 8 to 10% between the two schools who are ESL. As far as special education, again, I don't have those numbers. I will say this. If you looked at our charter schools, and this is true for all charter schools pretty much, but certainly in our Arthur Academies, we have fewer IEP children or kids with an IEP than the school districts. Part of that is because we do not end up identifying kids as learning disabled because our methodology of teaching reading is so good that none of them fail. And oftentimes these learning disability IEP or special ed designations are because the child has not learned to read, and when it gets to the fourth or fifth grade, then they're put into the special education system. So our rate of identification is lower.
Okay. Great. Okay. Mr. Kramer, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would like to see if these two don't mind, since they have the same last name, I'd like to see if I can just call them up together, and that would be Scott Haynes and Jim Haynes. Is that okay, gentlemen, if I call you up together? Okay. The Haynes. Well, I don't think they're quite brothers.
Gives me the shorter chair, no less.
When you're ready, go right ahead.
All right, well, I'll start. Chair Crummell, Chair Flores, members of the committee, thank you for hearing my testimony tonight. And I actually have a different perspective on this because I graduated in 04, and I'm actually currently attending a public Oregon school.
And please identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Scott Haynes of Sherwood, Oregon.
Thank you.
And so with this, I've been able to step back and actually look at what happened when I was at school, and I found that there are actually some pretty big topics that I found that were flawed. And The first and second one actually tie in together. And the first one is time away from the class. Like they at Sherwood, we took maybe a week to learn how to take the test, and that's actually the second topic. We had to learn how to take the test. We didn't learn any new content. We had to learn how to take the test. And this would just double up on the students and also the teachers, so we wouldn't know what to do because our teachers would actually give us double the homework and double the workload we'd have to do in class. And then when testing came, it would take 2 or 3 days, and that depending on if the students actually got done with the test on time. And if they didn't, we would take more class time, and the students that were done on time, the teacher would literally tell us to sit our heads down and take a nap. Or if we had any other homework, we can do that. The way that the time management was done was abysmal, to say the least. Third topic that I came to was that there is no national testing that this is equivalent to. Now, I go to Portland State right now, and I tell kids that I have the sim, and they don't know what it is, and there's nothing I can compare to them except for the SATs. I cannot compare any testing to them. And I even go to school with international students, and they don't even know what it is. And also, this brings me to my final topic. When I was getting into PSU, and also this happened to a lot of my friends, I told them that I had the sim. This is Portland State University, second largest university in the state of Oregon. I told them I had my sim, and they were not interested. There was nothing on the application to check to see if I had the sim or the CAM. They just wanted my SATs, my GPA, my attendance, what sports I did, that kind of thing. They shrugged it off. And I had a friend who graduated in 2001, and she told them, she was one of the first years to graduate with SIM. And she told OSU, I have my SIM, and she thought it was a big deal because she also got her CAM. And they looked at her straight in the face and said, so? That doesn't matter. And the only thing that affects us after we graduate is if we don't pick up our SIM and CAM holders, we get charged $5 for them having to get rid of them. So we were forced to take them. And I saw a lot of them just thrown out in the parking lot. Now, they were technically out of the school board's hands, so they couldn't be charged anymore, so they just threw them away in the parking lot, littered with them, or threw them in the garbage cans.
Okay. Are you finished,
Scott? Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you very much. Jim, did you have a statement also?
Thank you, Chair Crummell, Chair Flores, and committee members. I'm Jim Haynes from Sherwood, Oregon. And I'd like to address SIM and CAM from three perspectives. First, as a parent, when my son was going through school with his friends, and I was fortunate to have contact with a lot of his friends through sports, through the golf team, and football. And it soon became apparent. When I first heard of SIM and CAM, it sounded like a reasonable way to measure learning. But as I began having more contacts with the students, it became clear that they saw it as a frustration, as a distraction, as really a distraction from day-to-day schooling, from their regular classes. Some students felt it put pressure on them that I think was undue to simply pass a test. Some of the kids also complained about the time, as Scott said, that it took away from their regular studies, make-up time that caused some of them to have to incur. So as a parent, it appeared to not serve a positive purpose in the educational process. I tried to validate this by talking with some of the teachers, and there were guarded and off-the-record responses from the teachers who had to administer this process, who admitted that, first of all, they couldn't see the value. They felt it was an overlay to what they wanted to be doing in the classroom. Secondly, as a taxpayer, I found it remarkable that when some of my son's friends would come over to our home and they'd all do homework together, that sometimes they would bring photocopied pages of textbooks because there were not enough textbooks to go around. So while money was being spent for a testing methodology that didn't appear to make any sense to either students or the teachers, they still had the need for textbooks was not met. And finally, as an alumni of an out-of-state university, I have served as an alumni representative to a college fair just before Christmas down in Salem. So it gave me an opportunity to talk to some other college representatives, including some of their staff, admissions, outreach people. And I took it as a chance to validate, and I'm sorry that I didn't make notes and do this scientifically, but I asked administrators and recruiters from throughout the country if they had ever heard of SIM or CAM, and to a person, no other recruiting person who was there had any knowledge of SIM and CAM. None of their materials indicated even had a place for a test like that. If anything, one of the responses I got was, well, if it's an additional test they took, yeah, they should put it down with other qualifications, and maybe we'll see what it's all about. So as refer to a previous analogy, this dog don't hunt. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for either of the Haineses? Representative Robler?
Thank you, Representative Robler. The question that I have for Scott is, when you're talking about teaching how to take the test, that procedure, that was for the not the multiple choice test, but the other test. Is that correct?
Representative Roblin, yes, it was. It was for the wording in particular, because the wording on that test is it's different than any other test that we've taken. And since we were taught that, I've actually never had to use that, even with, you know, being in college right now. I've never had to use that on any other test that I've taken.
And those are the performance tests, and I don't know why that skipped me. Follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Roblin.
So did that happen in both your math and in your English classes?
Yes, it did.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Thank you very much, gentlemen. I'd like to call up J.T. Grobert and Steve Schott. If I can have you both come up together, that would be, if that's all right with you. You'd rather wait? All right. I'm just trying to save time by bringing people up together, and so that's all right. And if you would please state your name for the record.
My name is J.T. Grobert from the Clackamas area, and I'd like to thank Representative Flores and other members of the committee for the opportunity to speak today. It's nice to talk to a committee that where obviously you're listening and have a sense of humor. That's nice. A lot of what I wanted to say is ground that's already been plowed. I'll be brief, I think. But I just wanted to just briefly touch on things that have concerned me. I have three children. Two are still, one is in elementary school and one's in high school and a third in college. So, and even if I didn't have children in school, I'd still be concerned about these matters. I think that the SIM and the Certificate of Initial Mastery and Advanced Mastery, I think they should be discontinued. I think the Educational Act for the 21st Century was a bad idea from start to finish, and we would be much better off to replace that scheme with something different. I believe it should be replaced with something that's more effective, with more effective standardized tests and more real educational choice for students and parents. And the reasons that I think this program is a failure have about four central reasons. One is that students, parents, and taxpayers have dealt with this for nearly 15 years. I think it began around 1991, so it's 14, 15, somewhere in there. I'm not sure exactly when it started. And based on the information that's available to me after all that time, we have a success rate of about less than a third. According to the Department of Education, we have their latest numbers that I could find, 2002, 2003, which what would that be, 12 years, 12, 13 years of implementation. The total number of people who have the total number of students with diplomas, that is, I presume that's the kids that have graduated, who have a SIM, is only 32.3%. Now, if for all students. Now, if we consider that there are a number of students that didn't graduate, that number would be even lower. Now, that's a lot of time and effort and money for where we hit the target only less than one third of the time. I think that's a serious problem. But at this rate, it'll take us about 70 more years to get to 100%. And you know, again, these are numbers that are available to me. I may be interpreting them wrong, but I think I'm fairly close. Another reason that this is a failure is that as others have said, it seems to have little or no value in Oregon, and maybe even less value outside of Oregon. And I think it is the case that there are SIMS in other states, but they were, in a sense, used the same framework, but were homegrown to some extent. But they're different. They're not directly comparable, as far as I know. It's fair because the standards, I think there's at least, if the standards may be valid, they may be invalid, but regardless, I think there is concern about whether they are or not. And it would be great if we could get more substantiation or proof or comfort, get our comfort level up about whether or not the underlying tests really represent what we're trying to test for. I'm not in a position to say they're invalid. I'm just saying that I think that's a concern. It certainly is on my part. And the final reason I think it's a failure is these programs are a failure is that they are not Oregon programs. They didn't emanate from the tradition of independent thinking and originality that Oregon used to be famous for. These were brought here by people from the outside. In my opinion, they were implemented in kind of a, if you will, a lemming stupid rush. There wasn't a lot of debate. I don't think I heard anything about this, the implementation of this, until it was already passed. I don't think it got much time and discussion in the legislature. And there it was. And there was this radical change. And when I first went to the elementary school in my area and heard what was going on, I was somewhat astounded at the scope of this effort and how much money it appeared it was going to cost and the lack of flexibility. I was told, this is the way it is. I asked if there were any alternatives. I was told no. And kind of go home and pay your taxes, and this is the way it's going to be. And I didn't like that. So basically that's, because so many people have so eloquently covered most of what I wanted to say, that's pretty much my summary. But I do believe that dumping this educational regime would not be an expression of weakness on the part of citizens or taxpayers or legislators. Instead, it would be a return to our own critical thinking that we used to be so proud of.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay. Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Steve, you want to go ahead and come on up, and then let me just put you on deck, and that would be Kate Wilkins. Is Kate here? Okay. You'll be up next, Ms. Wilkins.
Good afternoon, Chair Crummel and Chair Flores, committee. My name is Steve Schopp. I live in Tualatin, and I'm eager to speak here because I'm a rare parent who followed all of SIMCAM from its inception through my daughter's K-12 career, beginning as I walked my daughter to class and into the classroom literally every single day of her elementary years. I was eager to discuss things early in the morning with the teacher on a friendly basis and got to know them, which automatically led to questions early on when SIM first arrived and my daughter's first grade level. It proceeded with further questions and concerns, and not just from me, but the teachers themselves, and grew into where we are today. My daughter then was one of three students in her school, first graders, designated TAG. Soon became aware that the focus was not going to be on TAG. It was not going to be on special ed. It was not going to be on second language students. It was not going to be on graduation rate. It was not going to be on closing the achievement gap. It was going to be on the Oregon school reform. I've since then, of course, attended many hearings, done an enormous amount of background work. I've researched the SIM and the CAM to a length that goes back in the whole history of outcome-based education. I have held a monthly live TV call-in show where each and every time I have my television show, teachers call in with the comfort of anonymity to talk about their school and their district and their, most importantly, their students. I've talked to parents of every conceivable district around the area and as far away as Medford and Astoria. I've written to them. I've exchanged emails for years now. It's more than apparent that we have something of no value. It can't be no longer be defended. In the case of Western Oregon University, which was mentioned earlier, my daughter is now a freshman at Western Oregon University. And the answer is no. There was no mention, no line item on the application process for any mention or consideration of the SIM. Likewise, with Oregon State, where she applied first and was accepted and decided to go to Western with some other friends of hers from high school. None of her friends were given this SIM to application process any state college here in the state of Oregon. So we don't need to talk about the rest of the country. The fact that it's not valid or used here in this state, it should speak volumes. To address some of the things that were talked about earlier, and I hope I can have the time to do this because it's vital. For instance, in North Clackamas, it was discussed the ladies did a stellar job. And what I'd like to clarify with you is the last session, or two sessions ago, there was attempts to either dismantle the SIM and change the SIM, and there was particular superintendents who came in and did the hype job, and it seemed to sustain itself with a little reshaping around the edges. And there was a district called North Clackamas who, late in 2002, the superintendent persuaded the board to pass a resolution requiring the SIM for graduation, the state SIM. You're going to have to earn this SIM before you get your diploma. Well, of course, there was a tremendous amount of discomfort and troublesome aspects that followed. But as it grew into the first year, 2004, of when the diploma requirement was to kick off, there were a lot of things that happened. One is they dropped the whole idea of having a state SIM be required because they saw that they would have at least 50% of their graduates not graduate or be standing there with no diploma in their hand. So what they did, and this will demonstrate to you clearly where we're headed with SIM-CAM if you don't kill this monster, and that is they created their district SIM. And North Clackamas last year graduated over 900 seniors, got their diploma, and each and every one of them got the district SIM. It was in the papers. It was hyped. And wouldn't you know, it wasn't really clarified. Surely the article said district SIM, but the headline was, all North Clackamas seniors get their SIM. It wasn't the state SIM. I think it was 52% of their graduates got the state SIM. Bringing to another problem that has been throughout this entire process is the misleading and blatantly dishonest approach, even to the point where they're telling students, and I can't tell you how many parents had called me and students had talked to me over the period of years that were concerned about not graduating because they wouldn't have their SIM, not going to college because they wouldn't have their SIM, not getting a job because they wouldn't have their SIM. And where do you think that came from? That came from our educators and our administrators and our system telling them that, telling their parents that. It wasn't true. It wasn't true when they started saying it. And what kind of reform do we have where we have to adopt tools of deception in order to have them buy into it? Those are huge red flags. Another one is, what's it used for?
Mr. Shupp, I hate to do this to you, but I am going to have to ask you to wrap it up because we do have
I've got one more key issue, and I'll wrap up quickly.
Thank you.
Who does it help? My daughter was exempted in eighth grade, I think, and didn't participate any further in high school. But obviously, the girls that spoke earlier from North Clackamas and all the students that have a good support system at home and are doing well in school have absolutely no use for the SIM and CAM. In contrast that to parents, and I'll give you an example of in the Reynolds District, a friend of mine and his wife are having trouble with their son. And the problem was he was getting three Fs and a D, and they're bothering him, hassling him about getting his SIM. And it turns out he had 31 missing assignments. And yet still they're pummeling this kid to try to work in his SIM. And this kid didn't, he was also labeled EIP because he simply wasn't doing his homework. And during all this, he's getting hammered to participate in the SIM. And so in closing, to grab a real perspective of what's happened here, even my daughter's graduating class, they had around 150 students graduated from their high school. As of up to 2 months before the graduation, some 36 students had their SIM. And during the last 2 months, another 30 were given their SIM. And they did so by every single day sending a memo to the classroom from the vice principal, the staff, urging them to come back and take this part, urging them to come take this part. They handed out sims for speeches that weren't given. I know students that, all over the place who were given credit for portions of sim when they did not perform the sim task. They found some other means to simply, well, that's kind of the same thing. We'll go ahead and do it because it'll put you over the hump. And this is the beast that's growing and has been growing. And to play off the dog thing issue earlier, the CAT is out of the bag. You're not going to persuade students and parents to swallow any of this any longer. And if you really want to rebuild credibility, and I know as legislators you're looking for credibility because you've got money issues, and there's a lot of talk about accountability and credibility. The credibility builder here is to get rid of Sim and Cam, because the public is becoming, every year there's more graduating seniors coming out, and they go to college and they apply for college and discover they're worthless Sim. You're not going to turn that upside down. So if you sustain this and you can't simply get rid of an obvious 14-year failure, then the public's going to be increasingly looking at you as, well, you can't get it done. You can't get the job done. So that's where your credibility is going to come from, getting rid of this. And I sure thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time to be here today. Let me have Kate Wilkins come up, and Cleon Cox is on deck. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
I'm Kate Wilkins from Beaverton.
Thank you.
Chair Flores, Chair Crummell, members of the House Education Committee and the House Audit Committee. First, I'd like to thank you for your service to the state of Oregon, the people of Oregon, especially to our students. I appreciate your coming to Portland, too, to listen to our testimony. Let me introduce myself and give you an inkling why my testimony about the subject should carry any weight. I have two children who graduated from Oregon schools that serve them well. They're now both studying at Stanford University. They knew the Oregon Education Reform Act as an annoyance that was phased in mostly during their middle and high school years. I also have two younger children, an eighth grade girl and a sixth grade boy. The Reform Act, with its testing and record keeping components, has been like furniture to them. All they have known, even if the pieces get rearranged from time to time. I've also grappled with SIM issues as a member of a high school site council and currently as a member of a middle school site council. In addition, I served as an advisor to my husband as he served on the Beaverton School District School Board for 6 years. In that capacity, I read everything, attended dozens of board meetings, reviewed budgets, networked, studied issues, and had ample opportunity to become familiar with curriculum issues, state issues, and how dollars are spent at the district level. Currently, I spend 3 to 4 full days per week, not only in my own children's school, but also in many other schools in our district as a substitute teacher. Daily, I teach lessons shaped by state mandates. Daily, I observe how this legislation affects staffing priorities at school. Daily, I notice how the testing mandates affect the use of instructional time. Daily, I listen to staff room conversations about what helps our children and what does not. Given my experiences as a parent, activist, and teacher, I'd like to offer up first what I think the Education Reform Act has done for our schools. The Act has helped teachers and administrators to think carefully about their objectives. Our teachers have come a long way in using assessments formatively, that is, as guideposts to inform teaching strategies. The use of scoring rubrics has helped our students to understand what they are aiming for and to evaluate their own progress. Occasionally, site councils serve as effective bodies for improving school communities. That said, I think that the SIM-CAM system is a huge drain on our schools, sapping away energy and dollars that could be used more effectively for our students. In the buildings in which I teach, everyone is constantly aware of when the next test period is looming and expending huge amounts of energy strategizing how to make the building look good, on paper, that is. The issue at hand is not whether the assessments are appropriate for all students. Often they're not. The issue is how to get the greatest number of students over the meets standards mark. I see authentic, engaging units of study cast aside in favor of the kinds of activities that will produce good SIM results, test results. And for the students who've already met or exceeded the benchmarks, what's the value of helping them improve? To do so would only widen the achievement gap, and who wants to do that? Seriously, the benchmarks of this program have become ceilings of learning for our more able students because schools have no incentive to serve them better. Students catch on to this attitude very quickly, and they lose the drive to excellence. Hey, I met the standard. Why try harder? The capstones of the program, the Certificate of Initial Mastery and the Certificate of Advanced Mastery, likewise have no meaning for the student for whom the bar is set too low. I actually wonder if these two certificates represent anything at all, apart from persistence, since the student may take any assessment over and over and over, again, 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 in hopes of passing. But the expenditure of so much institutional effort towards so questionable a goal is not my only problem with this program. It also comes down to dollars, huge numbers of dollars. Everywhere I turn, this effort sucks up money. In my own interest, it's meant the Full Employment Act for substitute teachers, replacing classroom teachers who sit for days in workshops to learn how to score with rubrics, refine objectives, or otherwise hone the art of teaching to the tests. Other types of staff development go by the wayside, as the state SIM mandates monopolize all available in-service opportunities. There's also unlimited work for classified employees to do the mountains of record-keeping required, particularly at the high school level. And tests themselves seem to be a fiscal black hole. Initially, I thought it was pretty arrogant of the state of Oregon to think it could come up with valid, reliable tests to measure curriculum goals. I was right. Our state's attempt to take on a job of this size instead of using nationally developed and normed materials has led to the expenditure of huge amounts of money for assessments that are virtually useless for many of the functions for which they were developed. I won't tire you with more ranting, but I need to bring this back to a personal level again. After all the years my family's actively supported and cheered for the public school system we so deeply want to believe in, our third child is ready to enter high school. She's acquainted with the public school her siblings attended and is even taking a course there this year. But at her request, we are enrolling her in a private school. She wishes to go to a school where she can strive for her personal best, and she is not convinced that her local public school will help her to do this. Her family's not pleased to pour money into her high school education, but we are convinced that the school she has chosen will better use the funds it has for her education. My heart is broken about this, but I'm not giving up on Oregon schools. I will continue to serve them as a parent, volunteer, taxpayer, and teacher, but I implore you to release them from this well-intentioned but misguided program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wilkins. Appreciate you being here today. Are there any questions for Ms. Wilkins?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Wilkins,
yes.
One comment that was of interest to me was this concept that the SIM becomes a benchmark that then becomes the ceiling to our learning and doesn't challenge the students beyond that. And you're a teacher, and I need to know if that in fact is the case in most instances, and I can see where it could be, because you're not challenging beyond the SIM. As long as everybody gets to the SIM, then everybody passes. And that's always a problem, that in the schoolroom you've got to teach mm-hmm. to a certain group. And unfortunately, that doesn't challenge another group. And unfortunately, that's beyond still another group. But the concern I've got is, how is it that we continue to have such good SAT scores and that it appears that Oregon students continue to excel in universities of higher learning?
I would say that they're excelling in spite of, not because of. And let me tell you where I see the priorities. Where I see it becoming a ceiling is in my site council meetings and the use of resources, and that instructional time and staffing. When we sit as a site council and talk about what we are going to do, we're talking about bringing kids up to benchmarks. That's all we're talking about. Oh, extra time, extra staff, got to bring kids up to benchmarks. We do not sit there and talk about helping kids who have met benchmarks excel. We just don't. Teachers individually get all the credit for helping kids move beyond because we have great teachers. We have great teachers in the district where I am, and I know Oregon has other great teachers, and they're the ones that help our students to excel. They do it in spite of.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'd like to have Cleon Cox come up, and then we're going to finish up with Samantha and Caitlin.
Good afternoon, Representative Crummell, Flores, members of the committees. My name is Cleon Cox, and I've lived in the Tigard area for the last 20 years. I have six grandchildren in the Oregon public school system, so I definitely have a concern. What really got me involved in this, though, is quite a few years ago. I complain about my taxation and also where it's being spent. So for the last 4 years, I've been attending my local school board meetings. From that, I've learned a lot. I had a business for 8.5 years in which I was a founder, and we assisted families and high school students to get into college. The purpose was to help them select the proper college, find as much money as they could get without paying it back, and write better essays, and to raise their SAT scores, because that's what gets you in there. I can tell you from that amount of time, what we know, you have about 3,400 colleges in the United States, of which about 1,800 are accredited four-year colleges. We dealt with 1,800. None of them ever asked for the CIM or CAM. All they wanted to know is, what are your grades, what is your SAT score, and how well can you write? Those were the main things that they were after in order to get approved into that college. Now, you've talked about the new child left behind and assessments. In the 4 years that I spent watching the school board and what's going on and getting to know the people, what I'm finding is that the schools, in my case, complain about the No Child Left Behind because it's a burden to them. But on the same hand, as I've listened and paid attention, everybody takes what they've currently done and says, we'll add it to it. And so now we don't have enough time nor money, instead of trying to look at how they do their business. And until they begin to relook at what it is that they're doing, they never will have enough time nor money. As a taxpayer, they keep increasing my taxes, I expect to get more from it. But I'm not seeing it. All I hear about are cuts, etc. Swinging on to, you talked about the speech and so on. This is where it comes to me that people aren't looking at things and they need to have the speech. There's a group that's been around for 80 years, talks about speaking. They also have a program called Youth Leadership. It's called Toastmasters. It's put in. I put it on in schools and grammar schools. You have that at your fingertip at zero cost. It's an 8-week course. So they're not looking around as to ways to implement and make things work for the school district, in my opinion. They're burdened with many things, but so are we all. To wrap up, you talk about assessments, and I happen to run across something that my mother had saved, unfortunately, somewhere back in my high school years, so it's a long time ago. You have all these testings, and I looked at this chart, and I don't remember whose it was, but it was off the shelf bought program where you took a test back in high school. And when I looked at the graph and I looked at the chart and I'm looking at the numbers, I said, you know, this really hasn't changed a lot in all of my life. In all that I've learned, all that I've done, it's still pretty much where I do well and where I could use to improve. So once again, coming up with the new things, nobody recognizes we need to spend our money better. And that would be, if there's a complaint I have, that's my complaint. As a overall, we're not spending it correctly and getting what we think we're supposed to get. Board members.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you being here today. And are there any questions for? There aren't. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, I like the comment that we don't need an improvement course to tell us what we can do better. We probably already know a dozen things that can help us be better. We shouldn't be having to spend money on self-improvement courses all the time.
Yeah. Samantha and Caitlin.
You have a heavy burden here. You're batting cleanup.
I'm Samantha Truex. I'm a junior here at Wilson.
I'm Caitlin Park, and I'm also a junior here at Wilson.
We have taken a lot of SIM tests at Wilson, and never has a teacher been able to tell us what a SIM test is, what it stands for, how they're supposed to teach it to us. Never has the grading been explained to us. And how are the students supposed to know is basically what I'm trying to get at.
The SIM testing is a big waste of time and money that could be going to academics and sports. We almost lost our football last year, and we don't want to lose. We don't want other things to be in jeopardy.
And as a part of the Wilson volleyball team, the prices that I have paid every year to play volleyball have been rising, and I think that this money that we're spending for SIM testing could go to either a better test that tells you more about us and tells us more about our learning abilities could be used instead of the SIM testing. And I just think that teachers teach us, like, to pass the test. They don't teach us about the questions that are on the test. They teach us how to pass it. They don't teach us what we need to know to answer the questions, basically.
So basically our bottom line is that it's a waste of our time and our money. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for these two young ladies? Thank you very much for being here today.
And for your patience. Thank you for waiting to the end.
Is there anyone else? That is everyone that is on all of our lists. Is there anyone else who would like to make a brief comment?
Yes, pretty well, Mr. Chair. You'd have us out of here on the road by 5:30, and it was well managed.
I think we have accomplished that. I would like to just very quickly, and then I'll turn. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Schott. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I would like to just very quickly thank the people that came today and gave testimony, and I particularly appreciate the students coming and spending the time to be here and hear about the issue and talk about the issue and what your perspective is from the classroom and what the teacher's perspective is as well. I think one of the things that we on the audits committee have to really look at is the cost that we are looking at, the impacts that it has on the classroom, the reliability of the instruments themselves, and what is this doing in terms of performance for the Department of Education as a whole and our school districts as a whole, and how can we really be pushing those dollars into the classroom to get a better result. And as Mr. Schott had mentioned about outcomes-based education, which is what when we're seeing student performance on the rise and our confidence levels being higher and those sorts of things. So I think, and the number one thing, of course, in any education system should be what the value is to the students. So with that, I will close. Thank you. Thank you very much, members, for being here. And Representative Flores, if you want to make any parting shots, you may. And then why don't you gavel us out?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, of course, I know that all of our concerns are to not necessarily have the ideological argument, but to really determine what is best for our students. And I know that is of the utmost importance to me, all of our members. And thank you all for being here and making your concerns and points of view known. I would also like to thank very much Jim Keller and Kelly Whiting, we share them as our committee administrator and staff. Thank you very much for doing all of the arranging, trekking all of this. And if you need hands to help tear down, I'm sure we can help with that as well. Thank you, committee. And the House Education Committee will be adjourned.
And the House Audits Committee will be adjourned.
Yes.